So I just want to review to get us back into where we were, because we've had a long break from this sugya. Right now we're on Daf Lamed Hamed Aleph. Well, the last thing that we spoke about was the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel and how that can work together or not be inconsistent with the position of Rav Nachman. So I'm gonna go back to the beginning here, just to sort of explain the steps that we have here. Rav Nachman, at the end of the day, on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, says, if you have two people who are fighting over a boat, Hahu Arba, they're fighting over a yacht, who it belongs to. And we don't know. Nobody has evidence. Nobody has edus. Nobody has edus that have belonged to their fathers, if that would mean anything. The maskan of the Gemara is that ideally, Beis Din stays out of the matter, and kol da'olim gavar. Whoever is stronger wins. Now, some of you are taller, some of you are shorter. Some of you are stronger, some of you are weaker. That seems to be a strange formula for deciding. Being fast here doesn't necessarily help you, Eitan. So what kind of a decision is that? What kind of a decision-making basis? So the Rishonim say that Kol Da'olam Gvar is partially based on the assumption that the person to whom it really belongs is going to fight harder because they feel more strongly. And the person to whom it doesn't belong is less likely to fight hard because they say, look, what's the point of my, you know, getting into a big fist fight here and wrestling here, where at the end of the day he might find riots and they'll take it away from me anyway. So it's not even worth my effort. So that's why I say kol da'olam gvar. Fine. And if this is all we knew about disputes and disputed property, everything would be fine. The problem is, we have a Mishnah. The Gemara has several problems here. And we also have the first sugya, the first Mishnah Bava Metzia. And the first Mishnah Bava Metzia says that Shnayim Ochzim Betalis, Ze Omer Kula Shali, Ani Mitzasiya Bekula Shali, Ze Omer Mitzasiya, Ze Mitzasiya, Ze Omer Kula Shali, Ze Omer Kula Shali. So the bottom line is they each take some certain kind of an oath. The Mishnah and the Gemara work out the nusach of that oath, and then they split it. So the bottom line is that they're chulkim in that case. We don't say, okay, why don't the two of you fight it out? Let's watch what happens, because it's entertaining, right? Fighting, I think, has a very long history of being entertaining. Like boxing and wrestling go back at least to 2,500 years, if not more. So let's just, you know, Beis Din works hard. They could use some amusing times. So let's watch these two people fight it out. And the answer is no. Yachloku. The Gemara Bava Metzia. So our Gemara, very importantly, and this is the central discussion which we may get to start today, I'll ask the question this way. For those who have done the Rishonim, what is the central question that's bothering the Rishonim? Is one question, and I'll call it a textual question. What is pushing the Rishonim in the sugya? What's bugging them? No. You're not totally off. But I think there's something more immediate. Before you get to why don't we say Achlok Ephraim? Correct. Why the question is, why does the Gemara in Bava Basra, in asking from why does the Gemara not ask the question from the first Mishnah Bava Metzia? Now the answer to the question is obvious, which is they're not analogous. That's why they missed. So the Rishonim are all trying to figure out, well, why aren't they analogous? Because they, on the surface, look pretty analogous. But that at the end of the day, that is what's bothering the Gemara. Why do we not quote Rishonim? Why do we not quote the Mishnah of Shnayim Ochzim? If you look even in the Rashbam's formulation, he gives you the answer, but he gives you a detail about that the Arba. He presents you with a certain detail that the Gemara doesn't explicitly state, but he says, this is what's going on in this case. From the fact that the Gemara doesn't ask the Kasha, from the first Sugya, Bava Metzia, the first Mishnah, shows you that our Gemara must be talking about the following case. But that's really, and what you said, Yoni, is correct in the sense that why, The question is, why don't we say achloku here? But in a more immediate sense, why does the Gemara not bring that case? And the answer is because they're not analogous, therefore it doesn't make sense to say achloku here, whereas it just makes sense to say achloku there. But the question is, why is Shnayim Ochzei Metalis not here? What is about it that's different than our case? Now, the one couple of pieces that are relevant, and we did the sugya, so this is Chazara, but in the sugya in Bava Metzia, the Gemara, and this is actually a very late construction probably, as I mentioned then, typically speaking, opening sugyas and mesechtas are the last thing that were composed. Even if they're Amoraic or from the Stam, even if they're not from later, like Rabbanan Savorai, as Sri Ragon identifies in the Geras, nonetheless, it's probably the last thing in the sugya when it's being composed. So in that sugya, the Gemara poses the mission of Shnayim Ochazin and says three different times, Lema Masnisan Delo, Kibananas, Delo, Kin so and so, Delo, Kin so and so. In other words, it seems that the position of these three Tanaim seems not to agree on different grounds with the mission of Shnayim Ochzei Metalis, that they split it with a Shvuah. And they both take a Shvuah. So, the Gemara on Gimel Amud Aleph asks the following question. There's a machlokas later in the Masechta, I think in the third parak. I give Ben money to watch. Benji gives Ben money to watch. One of us gives him $100, one of us gives him $200. And now, a year later, we come back and say, I say, can I have my money? And Benji says, can I have his money? And he says, yeah, okay, how much did you give me? He said to me, I say, 200. And Benji says, well, I gave him 200. I gave him 200. The only problem is he knows that somebody gave him 200, somebody gave him 100. So he knows that each of us are entitled to 100, that's for sure. And 100, he doesn't know. The Chachamim say that you give each of us gets 100, and v'hashar yehemuna hacheyav Eliyahu. The rest of it, we'll wait until we are enlightened. We are enlightened to know who it really belongs to. Rabbi Yosef says, no. Im kei mahisad ramai. Supposing that I am the scoundrel. What is my incentive? If you're going to give me that 900 anyway, I have no incentive to be moded. By my saying I owe 200, then she might come to me and propose, I'll tell you what, you and I disagree who has the other 100, but let's just split it, because why should it be out the money? So, you know, I'm thinking that. So that's the reason why I might decide it's worth my chances lying, because what's the downside to it? In came I have Sarah Mai. And therefore, Rabbi Yosef says, I'll call you Hemunach, Achiyav Eliyahu. No, you leave all of it. So now, I feel like this belongs to the world of game theory, of trying to figure out what's going through each person's mind. I now have to decide, you know, who's going to blink first. And whether I just want to say, fine, 200 is to get, because I want 100. Because even if 200 were mine, 100 is better than nothing. You actually have to, the calculation you have to make is, would I rather have nothing? And this is Tamos Nafshi and Plishtim a little bit. You know what Tamos Nafshi and Plishtim is? Yes, it's one of the most profound psychological insights. Because I'll have a lot of profound psychological insights, but it's one of these that has always struck me. There are five women who are not believed to testify. Normally, one aide is Neman to testify that a woman's husband died. But there are five, and that could be a man, a woman, you know, not a guy, but even a woman, and not a katan probably either, unless he's Misiach Levituma. But an eved is believed, a shifcha is believed, except for five women. The mother-in-law, the sister-in-law, the daughter-in-law, I'm leaving that for the end, because that's the one that's most interesting, the tzara, as they call it. The tzara. So I can't remember what the fifth is. But the tzara, Yevinta, it's the other sister-in-law, the potential Yevama. And then the rival wife, the tzara. So listen to this, Rabbi Osai. One wife comes back and says, Meis Bali, she's allowed to remarry. So I have a simple solution. Wait till she gets remarried. She's not bluffing. And then the other wife can remarry. So the Mishnah says, this doesn't distinguish. The Gemara says, no. Because maybe she'll... And if a wife remarries when her husband is alive and he comes back, there are all these financial... You get divorced and all these financial penalties. She forfeits everything. So the Gemara says that we're afraid that she chooses to remarry to lure her rival wife into remarriage. And, oh, she's messing over herself. It's okay, because she's messing over her rival wife. Tamos nafshi implished him. So it is striking at first glance. I don't want to talk about that, but the question here is whether you want to be moda to get your 100. You might not want to be moda, even if you're entitled to the 200. because you don't want me to get my 100. So anyway, so bottom line is, Rabbi Yossi says we need a knas in order to induce liars to not lie or to confess, and so on. So the Gemara says, is it not clear that Rabbi Yossi is against our Mishnah? Because our Mishnah says, Yachloku. And Rabbi Yossi says the entire thing is Yehemunah. So then the Gemara says, hold on. The Kash is not only against Rabbi Yossi. What do the Chachamim say? Each of us gets 100 for sure. So we take 100. And now we have 100, which is the Sha'ar. That's the Rishonim called. The Sha'ar Yehemunah HaShavayleah. The Sha'ar, what should you have done? The answer is you should have split according to the Chachamim. Right? Now, it's not a kasha only against Lema Masnis and Don Rabbi Yossi. The Masnis is also not Chachamim. Well, you have a case where we don't know who the 100 belongs to, and instead of saying Yachloki, you say Yehemunah. So the Gemara's mitarets. Gemara's mitarets that the that for the Chachamim, the difference is that by the Sha'ar, it's not possible that it belongs to both of them. Whereas by the Talis, it is possible that it belongs to both of them, because maybe they picked it up at the same time. Well, I shouldn't say it that way. It's possible that it belongs to both of them. Based upon any knowledge that we have until this point they come in front of us, it could belong to both of them. But the Sha'ar, the 100, can't, because the Nifkad, the person who was the Shomer, he knew that one person gave him 200 and one gave him 100. So before Benji and I even open up our mouths in Beis Din, we already know that one of us has 200, one of us has 100. Now, the Gemara then says, okay, so that's not a kasha for the Chachamim, but for Rabbi Yossi, what do you do? So the Gemara says, look, the kasha from Rabbi Yossi is the following. In the case of the 100 and the 100, that Rabbi Yossi says we keep an escrow permanently, not just the third 100, but the first 200, so that's a case where we know that 100 belongs to me, and 100 belongs to him, that haimana vaday b'chad minayim, haimana vaday b'chad minayim, and still Rabbi Yossi says we don't give it back. Now, when it comes to the talis, how could you split the talis when it's possible that you're giving half to one guy who has nothing in it? In the case where we vaday know that I have 100, you don't need to give that to me. In the case we're not sure that I have anything, you're going to give me half the talis? So that was the kashya against Rabbi Yossi. And the Gemara's mitarets and says, no. Rabbi Yossi would distinguish between the Mishnah and the $300 of the pikadon, because in the Mishnah, there's no vaday ramai. It's possible that I picked it up and you picked it up at the same time. And we both actually thought that we picked it up at the same time. In other words, when I say ani mitzasi v'kula shali, that doesn't mean I'm lying. You can be wrong, but we think that you're telling the truth. So we can both be true that we both picked it up. We both think we picked it up first or alone, and we're both wrong in that regard, but we're not lying. So it could be there's no ramai. But by the mana and the masayim, clearly one of us is lying. So in the case of mana masayim, Rabbi Yossi does what he does. He institutes a major knas. But by our Mishnah, when there's no vaday ramai, so there, he will, Rabbi Yossi would say, yachloku, like the Mishnah. End of the Gemara Bava Metzia. So that Gemara Bava Metzia is not going to make an appearance at all in our Gemara Bava Basra. So I already cited to you the case in Bava Basra of the two guys fighting over a boat. Now, just for analysis purposes, is there a vaday ramai there? Firstly, I said, is it possible, prior to their tainus, that both of them own the boat? I mean, it's joint. In other words, it's Esher Leo Shoshlem. That is possible. Is there a vaday ramai by the boat or not? It depends. There are two cases in the Gemara. One case, they're both fighting over the boat. We don't hear what the times are. And in the other case, it is Ze Omer Shel Avosai Ze Omer Shel Avosai. So at that point, I mean, you could ask the person who's confused, but at that point, one of them is lying. Right? Those are not, in other words, when each one says it belongs to me, he could think that he made a kinyan on it. Maybe the other guy made a kinyan at the same time. But it could not have been both of their fathers. You know, right? If he says Shel Avosai, means I inherited it from my father. My father used this his entire life. He died, my boat. And the other one says the same thing. One of them is lying. Elimelech.
If we're saying in the first case that there exists a possibility that the ability is jointly, does that not mean that the possibility exists that their respective fathers will be jointly?
Again, you construct the case as Ze Omer Shel Avosai. It was my father's. I saw he had the title registered at DMV only in his name, etc. Right? you can construct a case where they're making two mutually exclusive claims where clearly could not both have been true. Just saying that it's mine could mean a whole host of things, some of which could both be true. In other words, I made a kenyan and you made a kenyan at the same time. Whereas there are some claims, some ways you would present how it came into your possession. If you say, I built it. I built this boat with my own hands. And the other guy says, no, I built it with my own hands, right? You'd agree. That would be in the equivalent in Shneimach Limitalis that we show in the image, Ani Aragti, Avizelma Ani Aragti. Each one claims they wove the garment. And those, one of them is lying. Right? If they say they picked up the garment, was counted that way, they could both be telling the truth. And right, it could be true. They could both be telling the truth, and it could be true. Now, yes, Benji. Fine, okay. I don't mean, I'm just saying that these cases could be read either way. I'm suggesting, Pshat in the Gemara is not that the simple reading of the Gemara is in both cases, Vadaik or Amai. But I was just pointing that the first case lends itself more easily to saying, maybe they're not Vadaik or Amai, but it doesn't have to be in the Gemara. Conceptually speaking, by the boat, it's not clear, explicit in the Gemara, although most Rishonim will say, if you look at most Rishonim, the way they handle Zelma Shalvosai, Zel Shalvosai, they say, is a clear Ramai case. If you look at, I don't know if anybody says it befeirish here, but the Rashba in Baba Basra on Daf Beis might be in the first Rashba, in the Sechta, says that. Okay. So now, the Gemara, and this is the last thing that we did, the Gemara asks Akasha, how is Rav Nachman's case of the boat, where we say called the Alim Gavar, how is that different than Shnei Shtaros Hayotzim Yom Echad? And just to keep it very simple, Shnei Shtaros Hayotzim Yom Echad is a case, the way Shmuel says, it's a case where we hold like Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Lazar believes that Edei Mesira on a Shtar Akarti, that the Edim who actually make the Shtar are the ones who witness the transfer. And therefore, if I write a shtar, giving my field away as a gift, Polster, and then I write it, giving it away to Yitzchak, and then I write these two shtaros, and I give one shtar to Josh, and one shtar to Yitzchak, whoever I gave it to first is the one who's kona my field. The one I gave it to second can't be kona my field, because it's not my field anymore, because I gave it away. Okay. So now, the problem is, we don't write hours, generally speaking. Outside of Yerushalayim, they didn't write Sha'os. You write which day, which year. You don't write which hour. And the Edim, remember people didn't have watches, and the Edim probably aren't paying that much attention anyway. They're not paying that much attention. So the Gemara assumes, we're never going to find out. It's not that it's conceptually or theoretically impossible to find out whether I gave the Shtar to Josh or I gave it to Yitzhak first. But it is unlikely we're going to find out. So the Gemara now asks, how is Rav Nachman's case different than Shmuel? Shmuel said, in Shmuel's case, he said, you do a shud at the dayanim, which either means the dayanim give it to whomever they want, or the dayanim try to figure out who it's more likely he intended to give it to. That's the machlokas, what shuda means generally. But you don't do yachlokum. So the Gemara says, why not do yachlokum? So the Gemara says, and why not do kulta olim gavar? Why do you do a shud at the dayanim? Now, the answer of the Gemara is because when it comes to Shnei Shtaros Hayotzim Echad, it's because it's Leka Lamekim Alad Milsa, it's never really going to be found out. It's never going to be found out. It's not that it's impossible, but it's never going to happen. Unlike Arva, by boats, it's very possible that someone's going to bring Raya's a week or 2 weeks, a month from now, or something like that. So, the Gemara says, and the Gemara doesn't explain this, but the way the Rishonim understand, when it comes to a boat where Raya's may turn up later, the Beis Din should not get involved in dividing it up or in picking sides based upon Shuda, because it's very likely Beis Din is going to be undermined. They're going to look foolish, because then Raya's are going to come forward, Raya's will be brought forward, and then Beis Din will turn out to have been wrong. Therefore, they shouldn't get involved. But by Shnei Shtaros Hayotzim Yom Echad, it's almost never going to happen. So in that case, Beis Din might as well do something that they think will be a just resolution, which for Shmuel is Shuda. for Shmuel is Shuda. Okay. So now we resume the Gemara. The Gemara has one more case to deal with, which it wants to put together. And that is Hamach Lepar V'Hamor. And I'm pretty sure, based upon the recording, we didn't actually read this in Shir yet. Can I ask someone who is to volunteer to read it? If you wish to, just lower your mask while you're reading. I'm okay with that. Okay, go ahead. Umayshna. It's not hard to find. There are only six lines in the Gemara. One ha'ara here, by the way. There seems to be an interpretation floating around that all the Rishonim reject, that Umayshna was a kasha against Shmuel. Shmuel said Shuda. Why is that different than the next case? But all the Rishonim point out that, based upon the Gemara, always works. This is actually a kasha again on Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says Ahu Arba. Right? So first they ask, why is it different than Shmuel? Shmuel said Shuda. And the answer is because Shmuel is a case where Lekam Lamekam Alamilsa, it's never going to come. The resolution is never going to come out. So face and go ahead and do what you think is best. And now the Gemara asks, what about Hamach Lepar B'Hamor? So what does the Mishnah say? Go ahead, the Tanan. So there's a lot to unpack here. We've spoken about this a little bit, I think, but I'm going to go over this. The Mishnah here is constructed with a kinyan chalipin, precisely because if I pay you cash for something, let's say I buy your cow, Gabe, for cash. I buy your cow for cash. So, and your cow was pregnant, and we don't know when the cow gave birth. So if the cow gave birth before the sale, you keep the cash, I get the cow. If the cow gave birth after the sale, I keep the calf as well. So why does the Gemara not give such a case? Why does it have to be Hamach with Parah B'Hamor? Well, the answer is, if I go to Gabe and I say, Gabe, here, I pull money out of my wallet and I give it to Gabe. That's what I do. So, and now Gabe, you know, he's got the... he's got in his apartment in Washington Heights, he's got the cow. I don't know if they allow you cows. Do they have pets in your apartment building? I don't know, probably.
While you dorm, I don't know.
Oh, you're okay. There might be behemoths there, but in the human variety, okay. So, chas v'shalom. So, let's say, okay, somebody, Ellie Melch, you got an apartment in the Heights. So, let's say, are pets allowed in your apartment? I mean, not your personal choice, but your building?
There are pets in the building.
Okay, let's pretend for the moment that those are birshus. I suspect that if you had a parakeet or maybe a little dog, you wouldn't get too much flack. But if you tried to keep a cow in your building, it probably wouldn't work so well. But the cow's in your apartment anyway, and I give you the cash. All right, and now you go back to your apartment. It turns out the cow has given birth. Who gets to keep the calf in that case?
Me.
Why?
It's not yours, so I give it to you.
What's that?
It's not yours, so I give it to you.
I bought it from you.
You have an opinion on the calf.
Ah, so kesef doesn't work to be kona by metalpilin. If I give you cash, the way we pass it is hakanas chachamim to do away with the kinyan. Metalpilin are not nikna b'kesef, but it's a takana derabanan. And therefore, there's no suffix. Vaday, the calf belongs to Elimelech. But if I make a kinyan chalipin, the challenge is, how do you transfer the para, the pregnant para, without the para being present? Cash purchase doesn't work because kesef is not kona. But let's say I do a kinyan chalipin, that works. So I will give you my pet chihuahua in exchange for your cow, your pregnant cow. So in that case, as soon as you make a kinyan, Meshicha, whatever, however you kona, chihuahua is pretty little, right? So probably you do hagba on it. People carry the chihuahuas around. So you as soon as that's probably kinyan hagba you need. So you pick up the dog, and now the cow belongs to me. Well, has the cow given birth yet? Well, I don't know because the cow's in your apartment. But whenever you pick up the chihuahua, at that point, I am the owner of the cow. And the only question is whether it's given birth yet or not. So that's what Hamach Lepar B'Hamor is. The parah is the pregnant one, the yolda. And similarly, if I sell you my shivcha, a shivcha can be sold to kesef, because avada manikna bekesef shtar hazaka. So, supposing we lived in a world in which there was such a thing as shivcha kenainis, so I buy your shivcha kenainis, I pull cash out of my wallet and I give it to you, I'm now the owner of that shivcha. She was pregnant. She's not pregnant anymore. When did she give birth? We don't know. So the Mishnah says, Yachloku. Now, you need a little bit of background, just to be aware, and we've shown them to discuss this here, although it may not be so important for resolving our issues, but you cannot be unaware of this. The Gemara first asked the question, why don't we look at whose Rishus the cow and the calf are in? Why don't we decide on that basis? And let the other person be Hamotzi Mechaveiro Olav Haraya. So if the calf is in your apartment, so then it belongs to you. Supposing the cow had already wandered over to my apartment because it knew it was being sold, and now you pick up my chihuahua. So at that, so then I'm muchsat on it, and you want the vlad, you have to prove it. And if the Gemara says the answer is the koi ba'agam. It's in the swamp. It's in the swamp. Okay, it's in Fort Tryon Park. So it's not in anybody's rishus. So there's no mochsa. Okay, but then the Gemara says, why don't you look at the marakama who originally owned it, called the status quo hazaka? To which the Gemara answers, the Mishnah is sumchus shita. You know, it's in a chanami that according to the chachamim, whom pretty much always shown to say we pasken like, according to the chachamim, it's Eli Melas, if it's a suffix. Why? Because he's the Marakama. He owned the cow before, and therefore we assumed he owned the cow up until the last possible moment. He owned the cow and the calf. I should say more the calf is the relevant part. And therefore he gets to keep it. So the Rishonim Tosus observes here, and other Rishonim say, that doesn't matter for our purposes. The only reason why the Chachamim disagree with Sumchus is because there is a Marakama here. But supposing you construct a case in which there is no Marakama, there is no marakama. In such a case, the Chachamim would agree that you say Yachloku. And therefore, why don't you say Kol da Olam Gavar? Why don't you say Kol da Olam Gavar? So the truth is, if you had asked me, I think there's an obvious reason not to say Kol da Olam Gavar. But it depends upon the Shach and Taya of the Gemara Bava Metzia. What do you envision the Tainas in this case? What does Elimelech say? Speak precisely. What do you claim happened?
At the time that the cow gave birth, the sale had not yet occurred. As such, the calf belongs to me.
So I have a question for you. We made that you picked up the chihuahua here. We decided to do it in front of the entire shir. So you know when the cow gave birth? You have ESP?
Just ESP.
I didn't hear that, but...
Just ESP.
I see. That's more than ESP. So, do you know when it took place? Do I know? What are the tainas that are being leveled here? So the Gemara talks about this. The pshat in the Mishnah probably is Shema Ushema. The Gemara has a machlokas, whether Sumchus would disagree with the Chachamim by a bari ubari. Let's say you claim you have cow ESP and you know it gave birth, and I claim I have cow ESP and I know it didn't give birth. Would Sumchus disagree with the Chachamim? There it's a machlokas amoraim. The simplest way of reading the Gemara, the Mishnah, is Shema Ushema. But if you read the Mishnah that way, then the Gemara's Kasha doesn't even get off the ground. It's obvious the difference between Hahu Arba and the case of Machlokas Parba Chamor, which is the reason why you find it out by Arba. It's because both of you have a vaday claim. The reason why you're chloku here is because the truth is neither of us can. How are we going to? You're going to fight over something that you don't even know is yours? I mean, people fight over all sorts of things that aren't theirs. But in other words, what is the justification for having the two of us fight over something when neither one of us can really say? And especially if you accept the Rishonim's understanding of why we say called the Olam Gavar, which is the person who knows that it belongs to him, the other guy who knows he's lying, is going to be most nefesh bor. How can you or I be most nefesh bor? Because neither of us knows. I think you have to say, to avoid this, the problem, is the Gemara here is really asking the question according to the Amar Bari Bari. I don't remember if the Rishonim, I don't remember if Tosha says anything like that, but I do think that you need to It's not on the top Tosis. I don't know if the bottom one. Tosis at the bottom one just points out you can't prove from here we paskin like Sumchus. You just what I explained earlier. That in other words, the point of the Gemara is that if it weren't for the Marakama, everybody would agree Achlokin. So I just want to say that the Gemara only makes sense if you're assuming Bari Ubari. Because otherwise, there's no way to say Kol the Olam Gavar if the Mishnah is three of Shem Hashem. And again, the truth is, if you read the Mishnah literally, it sounds like each one is well. They don't quote the whole thing. I guess they do. Zehomar Shel Nachar to Yolda. The Gemara, in effect, as they say, retouches the words. It modifies the words to say maybe. But that's Pshat in the Mishnah. Pshat in the Mishnah is that neither one knows. That's right. No, they didn't, but no, but the point is if neither one of us is there, each one of us, really what our claim is I own, you know, prove to me that it gave birth in your rishus. Why do you think you're entitled to it? And I'll say, well, look, I bought the cow and prove to me that it was impregnated at the time you sold it to me. But I think both of us know that we don't know.
But each one thinks that they're the rightful owner, whether or not they can.
Correct, but not on the basis of facts, but on the basis of, you know, he thinks he should be his because he owned the cow previously. I think it should be mine because I own the cow now. I don't think the definition of Shema or Shema, and you can see this in the sugya, if you want to see in the sugya of the two Shvarim chasing, you know, who do Nezek, and it's a question whether the Tam did the Nezek, the Muad did the Nezek, clearly there's a case that's neither part, again, the Shema or Shema, there's neither one saw it. You come after the fact, so you don't know which one did. So I think that it doesn't make a lot of sense to say that this is a Shema Shema case. Because otherwise, Kol the Olam, I don't see how you say Kol the Olam Gavar.
And don't you assume that Kol the Olam Gavar
is some sort of weird. Yeah, but cannot only be shown to say that. You want to argue for a Kol the Olam Gavar, but it's more than that. Give me an alternative. Ephraim, you give me an alternative explanation of Kol the Olam Gavar. So I don't know if this is what you're saying, maybe it's what I want you to say, because I'll trap you this way, which is that I think the alternative is based in basically says, one of you is a liar, we don't want to have anything to do with this, we have no means of resistance, just get out of our hair, we don't want to be here. So that kind of makes more sense when you are dealing with a party where one is a liar. I mean, you may feel bad for the other guy, but well, Hoshe, both of them are liars, we don't know which one. In the case of the Parah v'Chamor, why would we adopt that attitude? Because we know that really neither one knows. They're really coming on the claim of law rather than on the claim of facts. So that, in a sense, really is our responsibility in certain ways to resolve.
Would that just be more transfer of
Maybe. I mean, it actually, the answer works better if you assume it's a Shema Shema, ironic. If you want to read the answer that way, it works better if it's a Shema Shema. If it's a Bari Bari, I think it makes less sense. Not impossible, but you could still say Bari Bari, but okay. So what is the Gemara's answer, Elimelech? Go ahead. Hasam, last two words on the page. All right, so this, we've spoken about Lil Dror de Mamona. I much prefer the interpretation of the Ramban and most Rishonim and Rashbam here as well, not the one offered by Tosis here. Tosis's explanation here is important. Maybe we'll come back to it. Rashi and Bava Metzia, we mentioned before the break, Rashi and Bava Metzia offers a completely different interpretation of Dror de Mamona on the bottom of Beis and Beis. And I much prefer the Rashba's interpretation that Dror de Mamona there means something totally different than here. They're not really, those two terminologies are not at all, I mean, they're the same word, but they mean two totally different things. And that's how Rashi would understand. In other words, in Bava Metzia, the words drar de mamona means chisaron mamon, and that only applies in that sugya, and I think it's the easiest way to deal with it, because Rashi's interpretation makes a lot of sense in Bava Metzia. And here I would prefer to adopt for the Ramban's approach and Rashvam's approach, which is drar mamona means shaychos mamon. So what is the Gemara saying here? Here, both of them have a drar de mamona. There, idemar lo demar, idemar lo demar. So what does that mean, Gabe?
Yes.
You'll figure it out. In other words, they could, Rashba says, we explain that one like Rashi, and not like this. Or, it's a little bit of a kvetch, because the Gemara there wants to distinguish what's the case between Shnayim Ochazim, where neither has Dror de Mamona, I believe, and what was the case they... What's that? Right. Okay, so... There we would say there is, in other words, by the Metzia, by the Metzia, nobody has shayichas to it before. Whereas by Sumchas and Rabbanan, that case totally do. That's the same thing as it is here. Yeah. Okay. So what does it mean? Idemar lo demar. That answers the explaining.
They don't have it before they got it. I mean, not
correct.
Only the they have
correct. Right. But we don't. In other words, there's no vaday shaychus of the. If that stage in the Gemara, you might even say idemar lo demar, idemar lo demar. In other words, you would say that one of them really has shaychus to the Metzia. We just don't know which one, and the other one is none. Which is what the Gemara is saying here as well. By the boat, the default assumption is that one of them owns the boat and one of them doesn't own the boat, and it's not like. You know, it's not like one sold the boat to the other for some question. It's one or the other. Whereas by the par and the chamor, is that each one has shaychus to the vlad. The only question is we don't know the point of transfer. Okay. So that's what we have from our Gemara. We have three cases in Gemara Bavasra. We have Hahu Arba, the boat they're fighting over. We have and then we have Hamach the Parva Hamor. So our Gemara has suggested that Shmuel says you do Shuddah by Shnei Shtaros because it's not likely to be revealed. And by Hamach the Parva Hamor we say Yachloku because each one has Shaychas to it. But by Hu Arba, only one of them has Shaychas to it, Idemar lo de lo demar. And we don't want to take sides because we're going to be made to look foolish because it's very possible that proof is going to turn up tomorrow, the next day, or the next day, and therefore we'd rather not do anything. So let's just read quickly till the end of the Gemara. Go ahead. Amri Nehardai, third line on Lamed Hamed Bein. So 1 second. So Nardai says if a third person comes along and grabs the boat while the two are busy fighting over it, we don't take it away from him. Why not? Well, firstly, what does the third guy say? What does the third guy say? Hi, Arba. Tidihu. It's mine. So the point of the Gemara is, the point of Nardai is, well, listen, who says it doesn't belong to guy number three? You know, the Machlokas is guy number two, guy number two. Who does it belong to? Maybe it belongs to neither of them. That's a possibility. And they quote the statement of Rechiah that a gazlan shorabim is not considered a gazlan. And the way he understands it is that Rechiah is talking about a case just like this. Why can't the dayanim take it away from the third guy? So his the interpretation that, by the way, we will accept lahalacha in one sense, is that if a third person comes along and says didihu, he gets to keep it. But let's say this third person seizes it and then says, you know what, it's not mine. I don't know if it's A's, I don't know if it's Reuven's, I don't know if it's Shimon's, but I know it's not mine. So So it's almost as the Gemara thinks that this is the case where Nehardaya is saying Beis Din doesn't take it away. Now, I don't know if Beis Din takes it away or not, but Ravashi comes along and says what? Go ahead. So Ravashi, as Rashbam explains, says that no, when we say Lav Shmei Gazlan, doesn't mean Beis Din doesn't take it away from him. It means that he can't do a proper tshuva. Of course Beis Din might take it away from him, and Beis Din, I don't know what they would do then, hold on to it. He can't do a proper tshuva until he does what? He gives each of these two guys a boat. Why? Because he went and stole, but he didn't know who he was stealing from. So now he wants to do Hashavas Aizela. But to do Hashavas Aizela, what do you have to do? To return a stolen object, Benji, what do you have to do? Give the object to the owner. Problem is, he doesn't know who the owner is. Now, in this case, we've shown him talk about, let's say I steal from one of the guys in the shir, but I don't know who I stole from. I know I stole from one of you. So, in order to be Yotzi Yedei Shamayim, for sure, I have to pay all five of you. There's a machlokas that we've shown him here, actually, whether or not he needs to pay both guys to be Yotzi Yedei Shamayim, or whether he could just put it back out into the Rishas HaRavim and say, okay, we're back to where we were before, you guys fight over it. But bottom line is that Ravashi is saying we will force him to disgorge the boat. We may not force him to pay back, and firstly, we can't force him to pay back both parties. Why? Because we don't know that it belongs to either of them. And we certainly can't force him to pay both parties, even if we knew it belonged to one of them, because we would be robbing from him, because it would only belong to one of them. But he can't really do a proper tshuva. He can't do a proper hashava until he returns it to the Bailam. And because he doesn't know who the Bailam is, it's very hard to do that. Right? The way he could truly be Yotzei Deshmayim would be to give each of them a boat and hope that one of them actually was the true owner of the boat. Of course, if neither was the true owner of the boat, then having given them each a boat, he still has not fulfilled hashava saikzeilam. Okay, that's not the part that interests me. I'm interested now in talking about the relationship between our sugya and the Gemara B'Metzia. And that's the question that animates the discussion in the Rishonim. There are probably five different shitas in Rishonim, at least five that I've seen. I'm not going to look at more than three or four of them, because I'm going to look at just what we see in Tosfos and the Ramban. You should be aware that there are probably three shitos in our Tosos, and then the Ramban asks you to look at. The Rashba, in the beginning of Bava Metzia, the Maskana, seems to come up with a slightly different shita. If you're interested, you can look at that. What motivates the Rashba will come up in our discussion if we don't talk about the Rashba. So let's, before we take a look at Tosos, Elimelech already, I think it's Elimelech, somebody made a suggestion as to obviously how is our Gemara different then. The Gemara in the Mishnah Bava Metzia. What's that? Anyone can say it. How are they different? Eli Mela?
It's a lot more conceivable for two individuals to lay claim to a talus at the exact same time than both.
What do you mean? Maybe. Yes, sir? Were you going to say something? Yeah. They're both Moksak on the Talus. Right? They're both Moksak on the Talus. As opposed to in our case, they're not Moksak on the boat. It's kind of hard. How are you Moksak on the boat? It's kind of hard to pick up the boat. I mean, if it's a kayak, it's one thing. A single person kayak, it's probably reasonable that you can be Moksak on a boat. Moksak. But that's not what they're talking about. Talk about a Sfina. Talk about a yacht. A cargo boat. So they can't be muchzak on it in that sense. So let me ask you a question though, and this is really important. This is something I'm going to want to focus on a little bit. Why does it, I believe that the Rishonim always start with descriptive. They're describing a difference. They recognize the difference between sugya. But Yitzhak, why should that make a difference? You're right. That's the obvious difference, and most Rishonim pask in that way, but why?
No other evidence available in the case that something belongs to right now.
piece of the book. So having a chazaka on the object gives you like a step for the developer. I sort of somewhat takes it somewhat exists. But obviously, in the case of the palace, they both have an ishara, so then you're doing the shorter thing to the whole palace. Then people in the boat who just see three kind of random people who say, we own this boat, we don't know anything else about it all the time.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
And anybody else can answer this question too. Now, I liked what you said, even though I don't know if I agree with it, but you maybe intentionally or not intentionally have highlighted a crucial issue that we do have to resolve, and in the next set of Makoros that I sent you is addressed explicitly. Why do we follow the Mosef by Dini Mamana? In other words, why did the Hamotzim Haver Ola Harai?
So you have an assumption that if it's in your possession, then you own it.
Supposing that I claim that you owe me money from a loan. And I fall short of proving my case. Based on misupak, whether you owe me the money or not. Do you have to pay me?
No.
Why not? Okay. Why in that case?
Is she saying in that case? The fact that I'm
happy
to be holding money doesn't necessarily
indicate
that I own the money.
I would think so. I mean, maybe.
I guess how's that go?
I want to go a step further. Supposing we have a situation where you and I have something happened between us, a financial transaction, and it's a machlokas harishonim, what the din is. So how do we pass again in that case? What should be, what would you assume should be the case? Hamotzi mechaver alav haraya. Why? Clearly, even if you argue, if you want to argue that possession of an object would suggest some type of proof, low-level proof that you're the owner. Perhaps even if you wanted to go out on a limb, and suggest that if you have the money, you know, for the loan, that in all probability you don't owe me money, because maybe the less like you owe me money than you owe me money. But if it's a machlokas poskim, had a rule in a certain case, I presume that the fact that you're mosagan in no way should serve any kind of proof for anything. You agree with that, right? So then why Hamotzi Mechaver Alav Haraya? Yitzchak.
I mean, we saw this first day, like tomorrow, where like at the ritual, when he asks, how do you Hamotzi Mechaver Alav Haraya? So, I mean, I don't really know if it's like this Gemara is practically speaking. But, you know, it brings possibly involved where we got to him. And it also brings the
Gemara says, why do you need a pasuk? It's a svara.
Right.
But so unfortunately, the Gemara doesn't really explain what we want to know. It says it's either Xer Zakasov or it's a svara. And it seems to reject the Xer Zakasov part. And the svara, see, I might have wanted to say that the svara was what Gabe said first, which is if I'm holding it, probably it's mine. Except that that's not the svara that the Gemara offers. What svara does the Gemara offer? That someone whose hand hurts goes to the doctor. So I'm asking you, why did we say Hamot Shemei Chaver El Haraya? Okay.
Is this different than any other case of Shalchi D'Oraisa where we go by Chazaka? If we have a doubt, throw it off, but we ask Hapi the Chazaka, so why is this different?
Can you give me any examples?
A woman was married, and we don't know whether or not, I guess, yeah, let's say she was married, or let's say she wasn't married. She wasn't married, and then, you know, the husband, some guy threw her a star kedusha, and we don't know whether they're the Adams or not. So, since she was the Chazkas Pnuya, with the right stuff, she's not an Ishtish. Go back to Zaka. Even though it's a topic.
Okay. So what you're describing there is a status quo Chazaka. It's a status quo Chazaka. As you're suggesting that the fact that we follow Chazaka is not because she's more likely married than divorced. It's just that it's a bona fide suffix whether she got divorced, and we know that up until that point she was definitely married. Okay. But this is the crucial point. This is the crucial point. The cheskas, the chazaka, cheskas eishes ish, in no way suggests that she's more probably an eishes ish than not an eishes ish. So what is that chazaka as well?
That's
cool. What's that?
That's cool.
What is the concept behind such a chazaka?
Inertia.
Yes. Newton's third law. Which is the way I've described it. In other words, no. I agree with you. That makes sense when it comes to labeling an object. In other words, when you're dealing with a concrete object, it is, you could say it's more probably yours. Or you could even say it's just a status quo. It was yours until now. And we'll assume by loss inertia it remains yours. That works well by a concrete object. It doesn't work so well by an abstract death. And I would argue, in other words, it's hard to... You know, I think the case is that you will talk about a chazaka, a status quo, it's attached to an object. It's attached to an object. I don't think that is applicable when you're talking about something in the call it an abstract death. In other words, you can say this woman was an Ashes Ish until now, and she will continue to remain as Ashes Ish until such time that we know that she gets a properly given get. you can say that this object belongs to me, and it will remain mine until it's demonstrated that someone else has acquired it justly. It's harder to make that argument about an abstract debt. If the claim is that you owe me $100, but there's some type of a suffix, whether you do or don't owe me $100, I don't want to say the $100, but $100, how can you talk about a duck of a status quo attached to that?
All my money is in my trust, so you can prove it not.
But we're not debating. In other words, if you had no money whatsoever, no physical possessions at all, okay, would you owe me the money if you owed me the money? Would there be a shibud?
Sure.
Sure. So you can't get around that by saying all the possessions are Mirshas, because my claim is not against one of the specific possessions, any or all of your possessions, Mirshas. It's against an abstract obligation that you owe me. It's hard to talk about a status quo chazaka there, even. Not even a status quo chazaka. See, I think that even the status quo inertia is not definitive proof, but it is an effect. It's kind of, there are two kinds of chazakos that we generally talk about. My favorite chazaka, which I cite all the time, is a chazaka milsa David legaluyeh lemeshakrei anshei. Something that is likely to become revealed, people don't lie about. It's predicated upon assumption, which is not true in every society or all societies at all times, that people have a sense of shame. And therefore, they don't want to be caught as liars. Now, not every individual, of course, is this true by. Look at politicians as a class. Not all, but many. Many of them will lie if they're not caught now. They know, or maybe not, maybe most of them think that they won't get caught. But some of them lie so brazenly, they know they're going to get caught, but they've calculated they don't care. Very few would lie on something that's literally right in front of you now. So, yeah, most people lie, I mean, most politicians lie, when they lie because they think they're not going to get caught. They think it's not a milsa David Ligaluyeh, but most people, very few people, will lie on a milsa David Ligaluyeh. That is basically a rove. It's a statistical probability of human behavior. We would call that, I think, a chazaka da asim mikoach ruva. A chazaka status quo, I think, is a little bit below that. In other words, by the object, I can hear it a little more. The fact that it's in my possession, does that prove statistically that, I mean, you could sort of talk about statistically most possessions happen to be the property of the people holding them. It's sort of, right? You talk about, let's say, even the woman who's an Ashes Ish. I wouldn't say, and you throw a get to her. I don't know that you can say that she's probably married, but you can sort of understand that she retains a certain status until we know the status changes, because objects that are in motion tend to stay in motion, objects at rest tend to stay at rest. So it's kind of an application of that principle. It's clearly not the same thing as Dasi Mikoch Ruba. But then there's the cheskas mama that I'm asking about, when particularly when you're not talking about a tangible object. And what is that chazaka? Are you puzzled at my assumptions, Yitzchak, or are you trying to figure it out?
No. What do you mean by cheskas mama where there is no physical object at all?
If you're holding that, well, who does that water bottle belong to on the floor? The answer is, my guess is it probably belongs to you. Now, you could have stolen it from someone, but probably it's yours. But let's say, so if you have a particular $100 bill that you're holding, probably it's yours. You know, but if I claim that you owe me money, and you deny it, and I don't have sufficient proof, the fact that you win, you can't, on what probability does that rest? There's no object that attaches status quo chazaka to, that's for sure. So on what grounds does cheskas mamon work in that case? And I'm going to go to the extreme case. There's a machlokas poskim, whether you owe me the money or not. Clearly, you can't claim, and not on a specific object. I mean, it could be on a specific object, either way. Why, in that case, we would say, hamotzi mechazal v'raya. Why? Clearly, I mean, there's a, I don't think status quo applies necessarily to the abstract end. It applies to, I think status quo always, you'd have to check this, but I think it always attaches itself to a thing. You can't claim a majority on that, you know, that probably the money is yours. The question of what belongs to you is not based on something that happened. It's not focusing on Allah, but it did. So why would we say, assuming we would, that's a factual question, do we? There's a Truma Sadesha, maybe not that way, but why would we say that I'm not going to have El Haraya? I'll give you the classic example that I don't actually know. I don't know where these dinim are. I have to find it. But everybody knows this. Kimli. Kimli is this principle that says, in Holcha Mamona Haro, if a minority opposed him, hold like, I would win according to minority opposed him, and you're being mochi for me, even though the basin wants to pass it otherwise, I can say, Kimli, maybe we hold like the other, like the minority opinion, and therefore I'm mochi to have El Haraya. Slight question. What is that chaskas mamon? What is that mochi to have? Why? Clearly, it's not based upon probability. It's not based upon a status quo. There's no object. It's an abstract that, right? I'm sorry? Except for it's not, I mean, it's not really. You mean that I came into the world not owing money?
Yeah, well, you see someone's time, you assume that they're not owing debt.
Well, I don't know why we would assume that, but.
If someone comes up and says, does he owe me money? I do not. Well, I don't think they owe the money.
Okay. I think there's something else going on here, Jeremy.
Could be like a societal thing that like we want to maintain some sort of natural balance. Once we have a real reason to like start the engine of debate to get a legal procedure.
So your formulation is overly complex, but I believe you're right. Not that it's wrong. I think it's very simply, I don't think this is a chazaka based upon probability or status quo. It's just a function of the need for society to function, the basin to function. A basin is faced with a suffix. How do they resolve a suffix? So sometimes they have probabilities, sometimes they have evidence, sometimes they have nothing. And the answer is, when they have nothing, you leave the moment where it is. In effect, you could say, Shevi al Tasa al. And therefore, Hamotzi Nechaver al Harai. The Mufsak wins. I ask that question because when you look at the formulation of Tosfos, and then you have to explain those who disagree, why is it, Yitzchak, as you said, that if you're Mufsak on something, you say Yachlokus, the two of them are Mufsak, whereas if they're not Mufsak, we just say Kol Da'alim Gah. Do you remember, with that looking, remember what Tosfos says? Does anyone with that look you remember what Tosfos says? I don't hold you to account for this because I've read Tosfos many times and I was already thinking about this question. So, yeah, go ahead, Yitzchak. You want to say something?
Yeah, I mean, Tosfos is a little bit complicated, but I do recall that he ends up comparing the case of the Hul Arba to the case of people arguing for a shtar, and they're not holding on to the shtar, right? In other words, they both claim shtar belongs to them, but they're not actually holding on to it. And so, it seemingly, both those cases are the same reasoning as why we go hold on to one. And I also suspect that the fact that they both can't.
Stop 1 second. I shall not be here. Read just quietly, without reading, all of you, look in the beginning of Tosfos. Okay. Tosfos, whatever it is, Ibrahim Aslam, Adal and Mesa, who are what is Tosfos? Why is it that if they're Mufsa, they then say Yachlok, but they don't say Kol Da'alim Gava? What does Tosfos say? What's that? Because when I see somebody holding something, it's like an Ansabe that he's the owner. You know, that's where you were going with what Gabe initially. Right? You said initially the fact that two people that someone is holding on to something in itself constitutes proof. I would say probability. That's what an anansadi is. What is an anansadi? An anansadi doesn't mean it's edus mamish. An anansadi is based upon probability. Looking at the situation, we assume probably you're holding an object, it belongs to you. It's not always belong to you. You could have stolen it. You could be a nifkat. You could have all sorts of explanations why you're holding an object and it's actually not actually yours. But probably, if you're holding an object and acting a certain way, and even though someone claims otherwise, we presume that it belongs to you. So when two of them are holding this object, we presume that it belongs to both of them. To allow them to fight it out might result in an adla that we don't accept, in a perversion of justice, because one of them will seize the whole thing, and the other one, who we assume owns half of it, because of non-sadeh, because he's holding on to it, will lose. We can't allow miscarriages of justice. We said we cannot allow injustice. And therefore, yachlok. If neither one is holding on to it, well, yap, shalit. Hayabedidihu. That's very nice. And it could be mine, and it could be yours, and it could be his. But could you look at the boat as yours? You may find. I mean, maybe. But you're not mosak on it. There's nothing, you know, there's no reason to think, looking at the circumstances, until you lay your claim even. Let's say you don't say anything. Two of you are standing by the boat with your hands on your hips. Now, looking at the boat, looking at each other. I have no idea what you're talking about. Why should I assume that either you own the boat? But who are you holding a palace? You know, I assume, unless you're just holding a palace, you know, very high up over a hubba, I assume that both of your owners are the palace. We're going to have to talk about this because there's an achlokas that we're going to have to explain. The Riva, I guess, I don't want to use the word Ramban, it's a little easier to understand. Shnayim ochazim betalas. The halacha is yachloku. There's a big machlokas harishonim. If two people are holding a talis, ze omer ani aragtiha, ve omer ani aragtiha. Each one claims to have woven a talis from scratch. In such a case, there is vadai ika ramoy. In that case, Tosa says, yachloku still. The Ramban quotes those, and see to be his opinion, that he's quoted as his opinion in the Torah. Ramban says, nope, you don't say yachloku when it's vadai ramoy. You only say yachloku if it's possible there's no ramoy. And the question is, what's going on there? What's the nekudas hamachlokas here conceptually between the two? So, I'm not going to say more on this right now, but I am currently working with the assumption that it has to do with how they understand what it means. Why is it that hamotzi mechavaraya, or why is it that cheskas, what does cheskas mamon actually tell us? In effect, the question is a cheskas mamon a strong chazaka or a weak chazaka? You could go so far as to say strong chazaka means that it tells us something, as opposed to a weak chazaka, which it really doesn't tell us anything, but you don't have any better ways of resolving things, so we're just going to leave it that way. We're going to come back to this issue, because I think that it's, whatever, we'll see the on the next set of Makaros. But for now, we're going to come back to where Yitzchak was, which is, what is the difference between our Gemara and the Mishnah Bava Metzia? And the answer is, because in our Gemara, neither one is Muchsak. There's no Cheskas Mamon. In the case of Mishnah Bava Metzia, they are both Muchsakim. There is a Cheskas Mamon. When there's a Cheskas Mamon, you say Yachloku, because you can't allow an Avla to happen and do nothing. When you know it's an avla, you know it's an avla because you see both holding the talis, and there's an umdana, there's an anansadi that both own the talis, and for one to wind up with it would be unjust. Whereas in huha arba, as far as we're concerned, neither one owns the boat. So just because one owns the boat, doesn't one grabs the boat? One is alam, one is gavar. That doesn't tell us. That doesn't suggest to us there's been any miscarriage of justice, vengeance.
nobody holds the boat. If you're holding your boat, you can't be invasive.
What's that?
I don't understand why being muktzah on the boat or not being
muktzah. So I'll give you an easy answer. The answer would be, you could bring Adam if they saw you holding onto the boat. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. In other words, you don't have to bring the boat into... This is a very important principle, and this came up actually in the previous Amud, even though it's not the main focus. It's a sideshow. It's quoted Derech Agaf to the previous discussion of the previous Gemara. You should know the case of Nascha de Rabbi Abba. I've mentioned it before. Nascha de Rabbi Abba was a case where a person wasn't Rabbi Abba's nascha, actually. He just gave a psak. Somebody had a metal bar, a precious metal bar or something like that. That's what a nascha is. And he grabbed it from somebody else. He grabbed that bar. The other person, now, if we had no witnesses or anything, then the guy who has the bar right now would win his case in court, even if he said, yes, I took it from the other guy because it's mine. The case, however, involved an Eid Echad. There was an Eid Echad, he was chotef in front of an Eid Echad. And the Eid Echad came to, you know, so you brought me to Beis Din, and you said, you stole my precious metal bar. And here's my aid. And I say, I did steal your precious metal bar. I mean, I did take it out of your Rishus Chatzvi. I seized it. Vididi Chatzvi, it's mine. So Rabbi Abba said, in this case, I lose. Why? Because there's an Eid Echad that says that I seized it from you. Unless I swear to be Machish the Eid Echad is like two Edom. And I can't swear to be Machish the Eid Echad. Why? Because the only way to be machash the Eid Echad is to say that the Eid Echad is not telling the truth. But I admit that the Eid Echad says I'm telling the truth. That I admit the Eid Echad is telling the truth. Chatzvi. In chatzvi. Vididi chatzvi. But I'm advancing a different claim. So Rabbi Abba says, mitoch she'en ayachal l'shava mishalem. What's readily apparent from the Gemara is that if two Edom saw me do it, you don't even assure him. But what happens if I say, but it's mine, I'm taking mine back. It doesn't matter. Because as soon as the Edom saw it in your possession, they're seeing me seize it, that doesn't change the Cheskes Mama. Once the Edom identified it being person A's Rishus, and they see that B removes it in a manner that's not with the permission of person A is still the Mochzak on the money. He's still the Mochzak. I mean, unless you undermine those Edom. And if you have a tray, if two Edom come and say, no, he didn't seize it, or whatever it might be, that's a different story. But assuming that you don't have anything to undermine the Edom, the fact that I'm holding it through now, absolutely, and with the claim that it belongs to me, means absolutely nothing. So if you want the case of Arba, you could have them be Mochzak theory. However it means to be Mochzak on a yacht, I have no idea. You know, but let's say it were a sunflower boat. You know, one of these all tiny, tiny little sailboats. Or a kayak. So we could both be holding in the air and pulling it to ends. Right? So it is, and then I could drop my hand, run to Beis Din, and say it's my boat. The fact that he might still be holding it. I say that I'm running to Beis Din now. The fact that he's holding it doesn't make him a muchzak over me. So bottom line is, the way most Rishonim say, is that the Arab is a case that neither is Mochzak on it. Meaning, you know, or let's say Beis Din is sitting by the wharf. How's that? That would have been easier. But I got the teacher at Nascha de Rabbi Abba, which is really important. Beis Din is sitting on the wharf. Three yeshiva bachurim. They need a break. So they need nature. Inside the Beis Medrash is confining. So they go over to the pier and water is very, very... it generates rest and so on. And then two guys are fighting over a boat. Neither's Mochzak. Okay, you satisfied now? Okay.
I don't think a boat would ever be Mochzak.
That's fine too. If you're telling me it's virtually impossible, you know, short of Adam and whatever else, to be Mochzak in a boat, that's fine too. Okay. That doesn't create problems. So who are, but by definition, you're saying is there's no Mochzak. Whereas Vaishnai Mohsen or Tumochsen. Okay, fine. So let's take a look. Let's start Tosos at least. We're not going to get very far. But let's start Tosos. Who would like to read? Benji? Go ahead.
I will argue the Havi Mitsu.
Hadin called the Alam Gavar. Why does Tosas say that, by the way, just as an aside? What is Tosas adding? Hadin is a called the Alam Gavar. Yeah, doesn't the Gemara say that? What?
No.
It doesn't. It only says it by Zerah Mashal Avosa. But Tosas says, the Gemara, Skana of the Gemara goes on the entire Amud. So first he says, Hadin is called the Alam Gavar. Okay, fine. The Im Tomar. That's the question. Tosas doesn't formulate as why is the Gemara not cited here, in effect the way the Rashbam does. But same question. In other words, why here don't you say Yachloku where you do say it by Shnayim Ochse B'talas? Umefarish, it's from Rabbeinu Chananel. Yesh lahamid becheskas mishehu biyado. Now, in other words, on what basis do we say if the Edom don't know? The Edom don't know whether it was really mine or not. They just saw me take it from you. So, on what basis does Basin force me to give it back? And so on. The answer is because when they saw it in your possession, there's an again, that wasn't your possession as a fact. I don't even contest that. But there's an anan side that it's actually yours. So that's what Tosa says. Okay. Now, and the last thing I want to do today, which is the problem that's going to exercise the Rishonim a lot, which is Gemara and Bav Netzia asks Akasha and says, Lema Masisa Deloka Rabbi Yose. Rabbi Yose who says, Hashar Yehemuna Hachiav Eliyahu. And then the Gemara points out that you could have asked the Kasha from the Chachamim, from the Sha'ar. From the Sha'ar that you say Hashar Yehemuna Hachiav Eliyahu, but we have a teretz there. But I have a question for you. What is the rule of when you say Yachloku? When do you say Yachloku, Tosis? Rabbeinu Chananel just set down the rule? When it's Tofes. When it's Biyada. Tell me something. The sha'ar, the $100 that Ben is holding, that he doesn't know whether it belongs to you or me, are we tofes on that? Are we ochazen in that? Who's holding it? What's that? Ben's holding it. Benji and I are fighting. The question Tosas is going to ask is, neither of us is mochzak. So why is the Gemara surprised there that you don't apply the din of Yachloku? Now, of course, by the way, if you work with that premise, however you explain why the Gemara asked the question, but if you work with the premise that neither of us is muhsak there, then you'd have to ask the question, why don't we say kada alim gavar in that case? But for the moment, Tosis is assuming that being muhsak makes the whole difference. Muhsak Yachloku, eno muhsak, here it's kada alim gavar. So Tosas says, what was the kasha of Gemara Bamitzi in the first place? Why would they have thought? Even if the Chachamim would say, Hashar Yachloku, well, Hashar Yemur Hashav Eliyahu, of course you don't say Yachloku in that case. Yachloku is the case when they're both Muchsakim, when Anan Sade belongs to both of them. There's no Anan Sade there. Ben is holding it, not Benji, not me. Ali Mela? We're not there yet. One step at a time, okay? One step at a time. The truth is, that's not a kash anyway, because the Gemara has provided a teretz, theoretically. Right, the Gemara is teretz of Dorara de Mamona. Besides, the Gemara answered that question there, in Bav Netzia. Dorara de Mamona, which is the same as it gives here. So that you can't ask the kash from. Right, that makes it totally separate. But in cases where there is no Dorara de Mamona for both, let's put it that way. When there's no Dorara de Mamona for both, so it should depend on whether you're musak or not. But the sha'ar, at least right now, we're not musak. So what was the Gemara's kasha? So the Gemara, Tosas says, go ahead. Okay, so Tosus makes a big claim here. Maybe we'll start tomorrow by talking about this a little bit. Tosus says that since both of us gave it to Ben to watch, whoever gave it to Ben to watch, gave it to watch for us, it really is considered we're both mumusakim on it. Because he is the shomer for both of us. And therefore, it's considered shneim mukhsakim. So we have to talk about that a little bit. And we've discussed this a little bit about pikadon and being mukhsak, but we need to talk a little bit more about it. But this is basically the approach of most rishonim, which is that when you're mukhsak, when both are mukhsak, and an anan sadeh that both are owners, and therefore you say yachloku, because to allow something else as the outcome, like kol da'olam gabar, would be an injustice. Whereas when we're not muhsakim on it, so we have no idea. So if we let the two of you fight it out, we have no better resolution mechanism anyway. We could very well end up messing things up and it's going to be embarrassed later. So in such a case, two of you fight it out. Maybe the right guy wins. We certainly, if one of us wins, nobody's going to say, that looks like a miscarriage of justice. Okay. Any questions for the moment? Okay. So tomorrow, please be prepared. Please make sure to finish Tosfos. And if we've managed to finish Tosfos and Shir, and we might not, then we're going to move on to the Ramban and Bava Metzia.